Okay, good morning, everyone. As I said the last time we were together, I owe Bruce a class on a topic that really bothers him. And sometimes, don't get used to this, Bruce. I'm sensitive to your needs. And from this perspective, once in a year, I'll give in to Bruce. And that is what Bruce asked many, many times. And that is when our sages went ahead and said the source of a certain halacha is a specific verse. Did they really mean it? Meaning they looked at the verse and they said, oh, even though the verse is talking about Noach and the flood, it's really talking about Gebrachos on Pesach. You see, water, Noach, matzah. Or really they knew the halacha and they just sort of took a verse and anchored it there, but they didn't really learn it from the actual verse. And in order to go ahead and present it, let's see one of the classical sources of what bothers Bruce. If you look at the top of the source sheet on the screen, you'll see one of the many, many times that indeed we find this phenomenon. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says as follows. Minani mili, how do we know that every human being, Jew and Gentile alike, are obligated in how many mitzvot? Anyone? How many mitzvot?
Well, Rav Simli says 613.
Jews are obligated in 613 biblical commandments. How about non-Jews?
Even that, by the way, there's a Gemara reference, one reference to it from a 3rd century Amara. No one argues with him, but that's the first time 613 is mentioned, Rav Simli.
The Gemara in Makot that you're referring to is one of the most extraordinary Gemaras because there is no machloket that is 613. The machloket begins with what are the 613? So that is an extraordinary, extraordinary achievement for the Jewish people. However, how many mitzvot are non-Jews obligated in?
Seven.
So the Gemara asks, Mena, Hane, Mili. What do those words mean? No one ever saw those words before. This is the first time that you're seeing it. Or because we started the shiur early, everyone's still sleeping. Which one? Mena, Hane, Mili. What do those words mean?
Where do I know it from?
What is the source from the Torah for this halacha? The halacha is that every non-Jew is obligated in Sheva, Mitzvot, Bnei, Noach, seven Noachite commandments. What's the source from the Torah? So the Gemara says, the Amar Kra, it says in the Chumash, a pasuk from Sefer Bereshit, Perek Bet, second chapter in the entire Torah, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam Limor, Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel. And God said to Adam, you can eat from all the trees in the Garden of Eden. So the Gemara goes to work. Everybody ready? That's what it says in the Pasuk. If I would have read the Pasuk, as you're obligated to do every week twice and then once with a Perush, I would say the Pasuk says that God told Adam, you can eat from all the trees in the Garden of Eden. And the next Pasuk says, not from a specific tree. And we all know how that ended.
Rabbi Yeshua, when it says Manahan Amili, does it say from the Torah or does it say where is the source?
Where is the source from the Torah?
Well, does it say from the Torah is what I'm asking.
So, everybody ready for this? Vayitzav, and God commanded, Elu Adinim. That's Noachite commandment number one, to have a judicial system. Hashem, Zeber Kat Hashem. You have to believe in God. Elokim zo avodah zarah. Don't do idol worship. Ala Adam zo shfichut damim. On Adam means don't kill human beings. Now everybody understands as we go on here that you would never in your right mind come up with this if you were just reading this verse. Let's go on. Mikol Eitzagan, you can eat from all the fruits of the tree. That is a commandment not to steal. Achol tochel, and you shall eat. Eiver minachai, don't take a limb from a living animal. So Make a long story short, Bruce, this is a classical example in which we see very clearly that there is no correlation between what the verse means according to the naked eye and what the sages read into it. And I guess my question is, did they really read into it? Or no, they knew there was a commandment of seven Noahide prohibitions. And now they said, let's try to anchor it somewhere. But they really didn't read into this verse that this is the source of the seven Noahide commandments. Or, on the other hand, mena hane mili literally means, what's the source? Maybe this is the source. Maybe our Brooklyn minds with our New York accents are not sensitive like Chazal. We should have been more sensitive to what it says. So that's my question this morning. Now, I am not the first to bring it up. Neither were you, Bruce. I hate to disappoint you. This is an ancient question, and I'll just quote the Kuzari. Have you heard of the Kuzari? His real name was not Kuzari. His mother didn't yell at him and say, Kuzari, go to your room. Who is the Kuzari? The Kuzari is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, one of the Rishonim. He's the one that famously said, Libi b'mizrach v'anuchi b'sof ma'arav, my heart is in the east and I'm in the west. I'd love to make aliyah. And the alleged story is he made aliyah, and the day he came to Israel, he bowed down on the ground to kiss it, and a camel came and killed him to death as he was on the ground, stepped on him. A terrible, terrible end to a person who yearned for Israel and didn't even live in it for a day, according to that alleged story. The Kuzari wrote a fascinating book called The Kuzari, in which he basically has an ongoing monologue with a gentleman who has many questions against our faith. And one of the questions is this question. Did our sages really learn from this verse, the seven Noahide commandments? Says the Kuzari, Kama rachok bein elu ha'inyanim uvein ha'pasuk hazeh. How far is the distance between what the verse really means and what Chazal read into it? Namely, between the seven Noahide commandments and the verse. The verse is a one commandment to Adam. You can eat from all the fruits of the tree except for one. And came along the sages and read into it. No, it's really talking about the seven Noahide commandments. Says the Kuzari, Kama rachok, look at the distance between this and that. And therefore he says, Ach etzel ha'am, kabbalah misheva mitzvot ha'eda, somchin ota bepasuk hazeh, b'siman shemakel aleihem zichram. Says Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, indeed, the seven Noahide commandments is a kabbalah. What's a kabbalah? And don't tell me it means kabbalah. That's not what it means. It's not Kabbalah that people quote when they say esoteric things. Kabbalah, as everybody knows, is something you should learn with an intelligence of a 40-year-old and onwards. I have not been zocha yet to an intelligence of a 40-year-old. Maybe one day I will. I'm not proud of it. That's the way. I'm just calling the shots the way I see them. Bruce, what's Kabbalah mean in the Gemara, in the Rishonim? It doesn't mean Kabbalah.
The Masorah, the received tradition.
Masorah. We have a tradition of seven Noahide commandments. That's how we know about it. But what did they do? Somchinota b'pasuk hazeh, they anchored it here so you'll remember it. In other words, every single time you read the verse, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam lemor, mikol eitz adgan hakol tochel, you will remember the seven Noahide commandments. But don't think for a minute, says the Kuzari, that this is the source. So if we would end the shir here, I would say, okay, anytime you find the verse in the Torah, in the Gemara, pardon me, don't think it's the source. Maybe it's not. If it doesn't make sense to you, it's just an anchor to remember things. There's only two problems with what I just said. Problem number one, the assumption here is if you anchor a halacha on a verse, you're going to remember it because you know all the verses. Anyone want to complete my sentence? You know all the verses, by heart. You may not know all the 613 commandments by heart, but you know all the verses by heart. If you know all the verses by heart, then obviously, if I anchor it on a verse, you'll remember the halachas because you know the entire Torah by heart. Do you know people like that? I know a few, Yemenites, others. I don't know the whole Torah by heart, so this doesn't necessarily help me.
Why do you say that you have to know the Torah by heart to make that statement? I'm not sure I see the connection of that.
Once again, because the Kuzari said the reason that they anchored it on a verse, even though there's really no connection between the verse and the halacha they anchored, is because it's going to help you remember. It's only going to help you remember if you remember the verse. If you don't remember the verse, it's not going to help you remember.
Well, I just have to remember this verse. I don't have to know every verse in the Torah.
No, but they do this numerous times. It's not just one verse. You know, Rav Herschel Schechter, Jr., the one that, Baruch Hashem, they're one of the biggest poskim in America, he said that once his students played a trick on him. They said, in your shiurim, you always quote verses and what Chazal learned from them in the Gemara. So we brought you a book that has all the verses the Gemara quotes. So they put it in a box, in another box, in another box, in another box. Finally, he opens the bottom box, and what's inside? A Tanakh. So very nice. You remember the verses. You don't remember the verses. So that's problem number one, a practical problem. Practical problem number two with this assumption is it's very hard to believe that throughout the Shas, there's endless times where our sages try to find the source for halacha, and it's just, you know, acrobatics for memory. It has nothing to do with the context of the verse. It has nothing to do with anything. I mean, as many times as a machlokes about a verse, and yet all it is to from memory. So don't try to understand it. Don't be bothered by it. Why was there such debates if indeed all it is a means to remember? It's sort of a tool for memory. I mean, if that's the case, why is there such machlokes about this verse or that verse? From this perspective, I introduce the shir with this Gemara and this Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and try to bring out two problems with his theory. And we're going to see today there are two schools of thought on it. Yes, Bruce, right away.
Can you identify the difference between an asmakta and a smakta ba'alma?
Say again?
Between an asmakta and an asmakta ba'alma.
We'll get to it. You're getting very technical, but we'll get to it. Let's, for the sake of the shir, say you have a verse. From here we learn halacha A or B or C. And the question you have is this the source or not the source for this halacha? Okay? Namely, is this the source? And it's your problem, Bruce. You didn't understand it. Or Rabbi Lewis will say, due respect, it's not the source. You know what it's like? It's very much like the Hasidim that say, of course, Avraham Avinu wore a strimal. How do you know Avraham Avinu wore a strimal? Because it says about Avraham Avinu, Vayavor Avraham Ba'aretz, and Avraham walked around Israel. Can you even fathom in your wildest dreams that Avraham would walk on the holy soil of the holy land of Israel without a strimal? From here we learn that he wore a strimal. Right? Well, I'll give you another one. How do we know that men should make the coffee in the morning and not women? Because it says in the Holy Bible, Hebrew. Everyone understand now the source? So again, the question we have this morning is a very simple one. Very, very simple. Is indeed, when we see a verse and our sages learn something from it, is that the source? Or no, it's not the source. They knew the source from other ways, but they try to anchor it. So let's see. Everything I'm about to tell you now, I learned in college. Some of you went to college. You know that in college you have professors and instructors. Some of them are wonderful. Some of them are terrible. And some of them you even remember their classes. One of the classes I took in college was a class that was called Mavo Lisafrut Chazal, sort of an introduction to the literature of our sages. And the instructor was a gentleman who was my neighbor at the time. We lived literally two floors above him, Rav Amnon Bazak. May he live and be well. He lives in Alon Shvut. He's alive and kicking. Rav Amnon Bazak taught me everything I'm about to tell you. In order to prepare this shir, bros, I had to do something I've never done before. I had to go to a CD, which was the way we backed up things in the old days when I used to have hair over here. And I had to look at the CD in my notes from college. And based on my notes, I built this shir. So everything you're about to hear, if you like it, I learned from Rav Amnon Bazak. If you don't like it, it's probably me not understanding a word he said. In any case, let's see what we have. He taught me in that course, which I remember, I just went through my notes to refresh my memory, that there are two kinds of midrashim of Chazal, two ways to learn from verses. One is called a midrash yotzer, and the other is a midrash mikayein. I will translate. One is an actual creative interpretation of the verse. Namely, they looked at the verse and they said, this is the source for whatever it might be. Classical example, Ulekachtem lachem bayom arishon, pri eitz adar kapot marim vanaf eitz avot ba'ar ve'nachal. We learn from that verse, and on the first day of Sukkot, you have to take the four species. That is a simple, I look at the verse, understand it, and I do. Okay? That's called a midrash yotzer. Literally creative. The verse tells me what to do. A midrash mikayem, on the other hand, means something else. Means we know the halacha. How do we know the halacha? Our mommies taught it to us. Our daddies taught it to us. We know the halacha. Now that we know the halacha, we are now going to anchor it on a verse. But it's not like the verse taught me the halacha. I knew it prior. Now I'm looking for a verse to anchor it on. Meaning, from the word mekayem, I am going to fulfill it. But to fulfill it, I'll add a verse to it. But it was there before the verse, it will be there after the verse. You understand the difference, Bruce? One is literally, the verse tells me what to do. The other is, no, my masoret, my Torah Shabbat Ped tells me what to do. I'm just, the verse is there for kicks, quote unquote. Just to go ahead and to anchor, fulfill what I already know. And in the poskim, these two points of view are there. Let's see first the Malbim. Have you heard of the Malbim? The Malbim, everyone heard of? One of the Perushim on the Chumash. The Malbim was a great Gadol b'Yisrael. He was a Lithuanian. He's known for his Perush on Chumash. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. But one of the things that he's known for is to go ahead and fight against the conservative and the reform. In his Perush, he does something very radical, in my opinion, and that is that he tries to show that every medrash of Chazal was the pshat. No less the pshat. So like I said earlier, by avor abram ba'aretz means you have to wear a strimal, that's the pshat. And it was sort of a radical fight against the reform and conservative. But in this issue, he says, forget about my reform and conservative fight. I believe it's true. Namely, it's on principle. And I quote, this is his interpretation, introduction to the Sefer Vayikra. Ki milibam yotziu milim, shehaktuvim amuvaim l'raya el ha'alachot hem rak tzionim v'asmachtot. I heard that people say, the halacha we know, and the verse is just to anchor it. Asher itzivu lahem tzionim la'orer azikaron. It's just to help your memory. V'ikarei ha'alachot hayu mekubalot b'yadam ba'al peh, but we knew the halacha without the verse. The verse is just to anchor. Says the Malbim, Zerachok Me'od. Anyone want to translate those words?
This idea is very far, very distant.
What?
A far-fetched idea.
This is far-fetched. Why? Kirayinu. We see throughout the Gemara, Shehem Shualim Menalecha Umishivim Mikra Ploni. They say, what is the source? And the answer is this verse or that verse, etc. Umakshim. And then there's questions on, are you sure that's the verse? Well, why would there be questions and answers and concerns if all it is an anchor? If it's just an anchor, who cares? Says the Malbim in a very clear way, this is the source. There's no such thing as we just anchored it. Chazal believed this is the source. That's the Malbim's point of view. The Ibn Ezra, on the other hand, disagrees. Now, the Ibn Ezra was long before the Malbim. However, the Ibn Ezra is also a Peirush on the Chumash. And he also knows that Chazal read into verses things you would never think of. As Archie Bunker is famous as saying, faith means something you believe in that no one in their right mind would believe in. So says the Ibn Ezra, in my right mind, I would never think that's the source for this. So what does it mean? So therefore says the Ibn Ezra, Ba'ani Omer Kal. I'm going to give you an ironclad rule. Ki yesh lanu batorah mikomot yeduim, sheshamum chachameinu kidmut asmachta. Here's Bruce. Ugh. There are things called an asmachta. Vayikar yidahu. They knew the halacha. Kemo, like, vayirashota. It says regarding a gentleman that dies, if he dies, his male children inherit him. If he doesn't have male children, the closest relative. From the word closest relative, in the pshat, it just means who's his closest relative, his first cousin, his second cousin. However, Chazal read into it, it means your wife. The word wife we have in the Torah doesn't say it in this context. And yet Chazal read into it those words. Says the Ibn Ezra, Ki haya yadua beha'ataka. We knew from a masoret she'ha'ish yirashet ishto, that a husband inherits his wife. Says the Ibn Ezra, the pasuk means one thing, the halacha is another thing, and they read it into the pasuk. Don't worry about it too much, it's just an anchor. It's what we call a midrash mekayem. But don't think for a moment that's the source. The Ralbag, another great Rishon, who wrote a perush on the Torah, Rab Levi ben Gershom, his years 1288 to 1344, he writes, Shehem samchu elu advarim ha'amitiyim ha'mekubalim lehem b'mitzvot ha'Torah lepsukim ahem, lihiyot kidmut remez v'asmachta ledvarim ahem, lo shiyedatam, shiyemotzi elu adini me'elu ha'mekomot. Says the Ralbag, this is again not the source. The source is plenty other things. A masoret, a Torah Shebaal Peh, halacha l'Moshe Misinai. The verse is an anchor, And therefore, don't go ballistic. Don't go to the barricades. It's just an anchor. So the Malbim says no such thing as an anchor. They really learned it from the sources. But the Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag say, no, it's an anchor. Don't worry about it too much.
Question.
Now let's see examples to see if they're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand why the Malbim would point to the verse to say it's the source. I don't understand the other position where they say, no, it's not the source. If, in fact, there's a machloket on that question, you'd think that goes way back. How can they argue about that statement of fact? When someone says it's the source, I mean, it's, how can you argue with them?
Put it this way, if it's just an anchor, why would they argue about it?
Right.
Who cares about what the anchor was? If it's all one big anchor, who cares? That's exactly what the Malbim says against the Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag and the Kuzari for this matter. Namely, due respect, if it's just an anchor, why are they arguing, no, that's not the source, this is the source? You're wrong, I'm right.
And you could say this on every halakha. Either there's a verse source or it's from somewhere else.
So we're literally in court. The judge is hearing the Malbim against the Ibn Ezra. The Malbim says there's no such thing as an anchor. Every source of Chazal was the source. My proof? They argue about it. Comes along the Ibn Ezra and says, no, most sources are not sources. It's just an anchor. My proof? My proof? It makes no sense. It just doesn't make sense. how they learn from this, that, it doesn't make sense to me. They learn from the word by Yitzav and God commanded. Oh, that means the judicial system. What does one have to do with the other? So each one has an argument and a proof. Now let's see a few examples. The example on the right side is a typical example that proves the point of the Malbim. You all know the example. We read it in the Haggadah of Pesach. There's a machloket in the Gemara if you have to say the third paragraph of Shema at night. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, ending with the words, Asher Otziti Etchem Mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Do you say it at night? Right? So the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Maskirin Yitzias Mitzrayim Barlilot. Amar Rabbi Eliezer Ben Azariah. Hare ani keven shivim shana. I look like 70. You all know the story. I never said the third parsha of Shema at night. Ad shedarsha ben Zoma. Until Ben Zoma came and read it into a verse. What's the verse? Leman tiskor et yom tzeitcha mi'eretz Mitzrayim kol yemei chayecha. Yemei chayecha hayamim. Kol yemei chayecha halelot. Typical example for the Malbim. Rab Eliezer ben Azariah said the halacha is like Ben Zoma, that we do say the third paragraph of Shema in Ma'ariv, because he convinced me based on what? Not logic, not Masoret, based on a verse. Oh, Kol Yemei Chayecha, not all your life, but the entirety of your life. Oh, that word, Kol, teaches me we have to say it at night. Well, typical example. This can't be an anchor. He's convinced that I am convinced to say now at Ma'ariv the third paragraph of Shema because Ben Zoma quoted a pasuk. Okay. Now, when you read the pasuk, I don't think, Harold, you thought, Kol Yemei Chayecha. Why does it say Kol? That's to add the night. I didn't think of it. I don't think anyone thought of it. But, you see, they read it into the verse. It convinced Ben Zoma. Example for the Malbim. Example for the ones that disagree with the Malbim. Let's look at the Mishnah in Sota. It says, you know, as follows. Everybody ready? On that day, Rabbi Akiva learned. So we're talking about the laws of impurity here. We're asking how far does it go? If you touch a dead body, that's avi avot atuma. If you touch someone, you're rishon latuma. If he touches someone, you're sheni latuma. How far does that go? So we all know it goes to a certain limit. So Rabbi Akiva is saying the limit is based on a verse. But the Mishnah is quick to point out that there's going to be a generation that's going to say by the third person removed, no more tumah. Why? Not because of a verse, but rather, and I quote, She'ein lo mikra min ha-Torah shehu tamei. Ba'alok Akiva talmidcha. There is no verse in the Torah that tells you that the limit of the laws of impurity ends by the third person removed. Doesn't exist. Rabbi Akiva brought a verse. Simple reading of the Mishnah, there is no verse for it. It's Rabbi Akiva's opinion, and he anchored it. Example number two for this point of view, which is even better. We're going to read in a few weeks about the ear Miklat. What's the ear Miklat? The refuge cities. Anyone?
The city that the accidental killer can run off to get refuge until they bring him to court.
If you kill someone by mistake, you go to the refuge city. So it says with regard to the refuge cities, you can't take money in lieu of going to the refuge cities, meaning someone killed someone by mistake. He doesn't want to go to the refuge city. He wants to pay. He wants to have a payout. Wants to get to a settlement? There is no settlement. You have to go to the refuge cities. That's what it says in the pasuk. Comes along the Gemara in Bava Kamma and reads into this verse something extraordinary that, again, I don't think anyone in their right mind would have thought of. Minayin le'nirtza shekalu lo yamav ve'rabo misharhev bo latzeit ve'chaval v'asa bo chabura shehu patur. You ready for this story? You have a servant. The servant finished his 6 years with you. Seventh year, he's supposed to go free. He doesn't want to go free. Forget about piercing his ears. You want him to go free. So what does he do? He does what we call in Hebrew a shvitat shevet. He's going to sit strike. Well, back in the olden days, you didn't do a strike and get a few moments on the evening news and show you. And then there's the response from the person that you're striking against. Are you out of your mind? What did they do? You're striking? No problem. I'll strike you. He takes a stick and he starts banging him until he leaves his house. Well, how do we know if he hit him trying to get him to leave and he hurt him? He has a black and blue mark. How do we know? He's putter. He doesn't have to pay damages. Well, that's a very nice question. Everyone ready for the verse? Talmud lomar, lo tikhu kofer. Don't take money. Lashuv, lo tikhu kofer, lashav. It says in the verse, don't take money for someone not to go to the refuge cities, the word lashuv. We're going to read it as lashav, which doesn't mean go to the refuge cities. It means go home. Now, the word is lashuv, not lashav. There's no kriyektiv over here. And yet, Chazal learned a pasuk from the refuge cities to a case of servants. Servants have nothing to do with someone who killed someone by mistake. And yet, they saw this over here. Literally, you ever hear the saying, apples and oranges? This is apples and oranges. Servant. Refuge cities, murderer by mistake, servant for 6 years. They learned it from here, says Rav Haigaon. Lav Rayahi, this is not the source. Elamidrashu, Bikar Milta, Halakha Mekubelati, Umin Sabin LaBeit Almuda. We know this halacha from other sources. This is just an anchor. So just to sum up, we saw the Malbim says this is the source. The Ibn Ezra says it isn't, and we saw examples for both of them. Yes, someone had his hand up. I think Bruce did, but he just stepped out a moment. No, he's back. Bruce, you had a question? No, let's continue. So, we saw until now that there's two ways to read when a Gemara says the source is A and it makes no sense. One is to say, it is the source. And the other is to say, it's not the source. It's just an anchor. And we saw there are examples to both on both sides of the spectrum. But perhaps the most amazing source that I know to prove that maybe Chazal didn't say this is the source, but rather it's an anchor, is the famous story of the Bein Sorer Umoreh. Have you heard of the Ben Sorer Umoreh? Does anyone want to translate those words? Who is the Ben Sorer Umoreh? Anyone? Ben Sorer Umoreh. Ben Sorer Umoreh is what we call the rebellious son. The rebellious son is a parsha, paragraph, and parshat ki teitze. It talks about a rebellious son that's so bad that the Beis Din will kill him before he does greater averos. Now we have an ancient mesorah. And what's the ancient mesorah? The ancient mesorah is, of our sages, lo haya velo nivra. There will never be a case of a rebellious son. Now, there's different views on this in the Gemara. There is a view of someone that says there is such a thing, and I even saw his grave. But the point of view that said there wasn't goes along and says, I'll tell you why there wasn't. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Gemara in Sanhedrin. Im lo hayta imo shava laviv bekol uvemare uvekoma eino nasa ben sorer umore. Says the Gemara, the only case you can have a rebellious son is if the father and the mother are equals. Now, yes, when a couple gets married, we always say you have to be equal partners. One does not dominate the other. One doesn't have to obey the other. That's very nice to say. But the husband and the wife are still different. Says the Gemara, you want a rebellious son to be killed? Listen what you need. The father and the mother have to be exactly alike in their voice, in their height, and in their externals. Namely, there isn't a situation where one is tall and one is short. There isn't a situation where my voice is deep and my wife's voice is more high-pitched. If they're not exactly alike in all these three things, you can't have a ben sorer umore. Let me ask you all a question. Have you ever met a couple like that?
No.
I'm not talking about a couple that's not husband and wife. Husband and wife. Did you ever meet a couple that the wife's voice is as deep as the husband's? Their body weight is exactly alike. Never happened. From here we learned. It's never going to happen. My taima. How do we know this is the halacha? Talmar kra. Einenu shomeya bekoleinu. He does not listen to us. Oh, from here we learn. Midako bainan shavin. When he says he doesn't listen to us, us means we have the same voice in terms of its volume. And therefore, if they're not exactly alike, the voices, not that they agree, but the voices aren't alike, therefore, you don't have a ben sorer umore. Gentlemen, when you read this verse, did you think in your right mind that's what it meant? It meant he doesn't listen to us. Well, no, it doesn't mean that. It means he doesn't listen to our equal voices because we have equal voices, not just in content, but in pitch. Very good example of what we call a midrash mikayim. This is not the source. This is an anchor. So yes, Bruce.
So it sounds like we're arguing or debating more than just the source, but the actual halakha itself. And I would have thought the Manahan Amili is where is its source? Not just how do we know it? Because this is, how do we know the halakha? More than where is its source?
Well, that's exactly what we're dealing with. Namely, where do we know the halakha? Is the source the halakha? That's the source? Or no, the source is a svara. The source is a masoret. Well, and we're just looking for an anchor to anchor it on, but that's not the source per se.
What I mean is, are they limiting the argument to the source, or are they arguing about whether it's a halakha itself more than just the source? I mean,
I didn't understand what you just said.
A source could be, we all agree on the halakha. You just want to know where it's from. Another argument is, how do you know that that's the halakha? As opposed to, maybe that's not the halakha. It's a different.
How do we know that's the halakha? That's a separate shir. How do we know that's the source? That's exactly the shir we're dealing with. Namely, is this really the source? Chazal, in their intuitive minds, very creative minds, learned it from here or not? This is just an anchor.
But from this case, it sounds as if it's more than just where is it from. They're saying the halakha is not that we ever even did it. We never did it. We have a source for that. So don't think the halakha is what you thought it was.
I don't understand what you're saying at all. What do you mean the halakha is not it?
Is there a halakha to put the rebellious child to death? Yes or no? And one says, yes, I sat on his tombstone. Another says, no, because we have all the... That's a different question than we all agree about the halakha that we never kill him. The only question is, how do you know they're going to kill him?
Okay, so in this case, I brought this example not so much to see if the rebellious son will or will not happen, but rather I brought it for another reason. They learn that it won't happen, not that it doesn't exist. It does exist. It's psukim in the Torah. But it won't exist in reality because of its details. And one of its details is this one, which can never happen realistically. But namely, the husband and the wife are not exactly alike.
But they don't agree about that. One says, I sat on his tombstone.
Correct. They don't agree. There could be a machlokas. Which leads me to the following question, which I think is going to answer your question. And that is, so let's assume that it's just an anchor. It's not the pshat. It's just an anchor. Did indeed Chazal just say, okay, we need to anchor it? They did eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a pusuk by its toe. Okay, we found the pusuk. Meaning the pusuk they looked at had nothing at all to do with the pshat? Nothing? Or no? They didn't just very haphazardly look for a verse in the Bible. They took a verse that could theoretically mean this, even though we don't see it. It has something to do with it. Like the verse that a wife and a husband, they go ahead and they inherit each other. It's within the parsha of inheritance. And the verse about the seven Noahide commandments that we opened the shir with is from Adam, not from Jews, from Adam, who was obligated in the seven Noahide commandments. So to make a long story short, it's not haphazard. It is something that Chazal in their intuitive mind said, wow, let's take something that talks about the context of what we're talking about. The problem with my theory is there are exceptions. We just saw one. The slave going free and getting hurt on the way out has nothing to do with the murderer that went to the refuge cities. So we do have examples, but some of them are just so far-fetched that we have no idea what they're talking about. And therefore, I'd like to suggest that, yes, you can't go ahead and give an ironclad rule about every time our sages learn something from a verse. Sometimes it's their pshat. Sometimes it has nothing to do with the pshat. And sometimes it's somewhere in the middle, meaning it could be, maybe not. And maybe because of this, we can finally understand the Gemara that I am sure you all know. It is the famous, famous story about Moshe Rabbeinu after his death. Excuse me, Moshe Rabbeinu while alive, meeting Rabbi Akiva, who didn't yet get born. You know the story? Let's go over it word for word, letter for letter. Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara in Menachos deals with the issue of how do you write a Sefer Torah? How does that issue come into Menachot? Menachot means the halachot of korbanot that are made out of flour. So how do we get from flour, korbanot, to Sifrei Torah? Anyone know the connection?
I guess bread, flour, is akin to Torah.
Flour is a hint to Torah. See, now you start talking like Chazal with their psukim. How is flour a hint to Torah?
Well, there's no bread, there's no Torah.
If there's no bread, there's no Torah. There you go. Okay. That, Bruce, is like the source of the strimal. I hate to say it. Bruce, I'll tell you how it gets there. The Gemara, as you know, is a live protocol. So they're talking about two korbanot you have to bring. Which one goes first? Who has the right of way? And since they're talking about that, they say, if you put on talis and tefillin, what goes first? Oh, we're already talking about talis and tefillin. Let's talk about writing tefillin. If we're talking about writing tefillin, let's put in mezuzahs and sifrei Torah. That's how they get to the issue. So after they get to the issue, again, all relative to their discussion, it says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, B'shah sh'ala Moshe l'amarom, Matzo l'akadosh baruch hu sh'yoshev v'kosher k'tarim la'utiyot. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shamayim to get the Torah, after that amazing day we celebrated this week, he saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu is writing in the Torah little things above certain letters. What do we call those things above certain letters?
Ta'amim.
What?
Ta'amim.
Ta'gim, not ta'amim. Ta'gim. We're not talking about what you have in your Chumash. We're talking about what you have in a Sifrei Torah. There are a few letters. The letters Shatnez, Getz, Shin, Ayin, T, Tet Nun Zayin Getz Gimel Tzadik that have tagim, little things above them. Now, little crowns. So he asks God, why are you putting these crowns? I want to take the Torah down to the Jewish people. It's been 40 days already, and you're playing around. Mima keva yatcha, why are you holding back the Torah? Says the Gemara. Amar lo, God said to Moshe, Adam echad, a certain person, shatit liyot besof kama dorot, in a few generations he's going to live, v'akiva ben Yosef shmo, his name is Akiva, Rabbi Akiva for us, Sha'atit v'idrol shalkol, kotz v'kotz, tilei tilin shel halachot. He is going to go ahead, and every time I put a little crown on a verse, he's going to learn from it halachot. So he's going to look at a shin, and the shin's going to have a little crown on it. From here, he's going to learn that Bruce has to say a bracha. Then he's going to look at an ayin. The ayin has a crown on it. From here, he learns that you have to keep your eyes safe. Don't look at terrible sights. So, Arma Lefanov, Rabbi Yonah Shalolam, Hareli, I'd love to see this man. Well, a little technical problem. What's the problem? Rabbi Lewis, what's the problem? Moshe wants to see Rabbi Akiva. Any problem?
Well, he's not alive yet.
He's not alive yet. No, God can do anything, right? So God takes the DeLorean, the time machine from Back to the Future. He puts in the year that Rabbi Akiva is born, takes him to his base medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu comes in, sits in the back, unnoticeable, and Rabbi Akiva is giving a shear. Does Moshe Rabbeinu follow the shear?
Not a thing.
Lo haya yodeya mahen omrim. Same Torah. He doesn't understand the word. Now, it's not because Rabbi Akiva spoke in Yiddish and Moshe spoke in English. It's not because he didn't understand the vernacular. He didn't understand the content. Tashash kochal. He started to get tired. He doesn't understand the shir. And he's sitting there saying, I don't understand what this man is saying. He learns from an ayin with a crown this. And he learns from a gimel with the crown. I don't understand him. Kevan she'igia ledavar echad. When he got to a certain issue, Amrulo Talmidav, Rebbe, minayin lecha. When he got to a certain issue, he said, his students asked him, what's your source? Amar lehen, halacha l'moshe misinai. This is the halacha that Moshe Rabbeinu learned on top of Mount Sinai. When Moshe Rabbeinu heard that, he finally understood it. One thing I understood in the shir. Now, what does this Gemara teach you? This Gemara, in my humble opinion, is the source that not every pasuk in the Gemara is the pshat. Moshe Rabbeinu, who received the Torah from God, hears a shir on sources, quote unquote, alleged sources for halachot, doesn't understand a word. The only thing he understands is halacha l'moshe misinai, the actual halacha he got. The source Rabbi Akiva tagged on to it, he didn't understand. He didn't understand how from a crown on the top of a gimel, you learn this, that, or the other thing. I believe this is the source and the pshat of this Gemara for what we were saying. Not every verse that our sages learned from is the pshat of that verse. It's an anchor. And therefore Moshe didn't understand. That's the anchor. But he understood. That's the halacha. I'll say it in my language. Moshe Rabbeinu would hear a shir about you have to have a delicious meal on Shabbos. He understands that on a Shabbos. What he wouldn't understand is if you say we learn it from a pasuk in Yeshayahu. Moshe Rabbeinu would understand that Shavuos is a holiday. He wouldn't understand that you learn from Eretz, Avad, Chalav, Udvash, that you should eat Milchik. So therefore, I believe this Gemara, famous Gemara, proves what we were saying this morning. Not every verse in the Gemara is the pshat of that verse, is the source of that halacha. The halacha was known to Moshe Rabbeinu, his student Yehoshua, throughout the generations. The source of it in the Torah may not be the source. And there's many examples of this. I just give a few this morning as sampling. But therefore, when you learn a source in the Gemara, in a Midrash of our sages, you have to ask, is this the pshat or is this just an anchor? And if it's an anchor, you don't have to go to the barricades. Moshe Rabbeinu was there. And with Rabbi Akiva, he didn't lose his cool. He said, okay. So yes, this source, the halacha say the same. I'm not so worried about what the source was. So therefore, to sum up, we saw today two different points of view on this issue. The Malbim who says this is the pshat, whether you like it or not. And if you don't understand this is the pshat, the problem is with you, not with our sages. And the Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag and the Kuzari all said, this is not the pshat, due respect, it's an anchor. The halacha is the halacha, the source, play around with it. And we saw that it may be this way on certain sources, and may be that way on other sources. You have to always ask yourself the question. What you can't do, and with this I conclude, is ever tell a student, or a chavrusa, or someone listening to your shir, or someone at your Shabbos table, how dare you say that's not the pshat? Because, I hate to say this, we play around with psukim like we play ball. Not every dvar Torah that you heard on the parsha is the pshat. Not every time you heard someone darshan a pasuk, is that really what the pasuk means. We use psukim as anchors, and it's legitimate. Just like we use psukim to find out what we're supposed to do. To go ahead and to say to someone, if you don't understand what I said, you're a koifer, you're not bikoris, that's 100% not true. You're not bikoris if you don't believe that's the halacha. But if you don't believe that's the source, that is legitimate. And we saw Rav Hai Gaon said it, the Ralbag said it, the Ibn Ezra said it, the Kuzari said it. And there's many, many other examples. So again, when you learn Torah, make a distinction in your mind between two things, the halacha and the source of the halacha. The rule, the halacha, is the halacha. You don't believe in it, you've got a very big problem. When it comes to the source, you never know. You never know if that's really the source or not the source. Maybe the source is something else. And the same thing is true when you hear different Torah in shul. I've heard psukim in shul from various people. I couldn't believe that they believe that that's the source of their Dvar Torah. But as long as I know, all right, they're darshaning psukim, I don't have a problem with it, as long as their message is concrete. And as we call La Amita Shel Torah, it's the truth of the Torah, I'm not so worried about the source they quote. But I am worried when people make up things that are not the halacha. And therefore, it's extremely important to keep this in mind when we learn Torah. And I'll just say, the same thing is true when people quote from our sages for politics. You know, should you join the government? Shouldn't you join the government? Should we bomb? Shouldn't we bomb? I'll give you a source. Well, not every time that's a source. Sometimes it's an anchor. It's not like, oh, I looked in the Gemara and he's right. Bibi's right. Biden is wrong. Or Biden is wrong, right. Bibi is wrong. I learned it from a Gemara. Not every Gemara is a source. It could be an anchor. So that's something to remember when you learn Torah. So if there's anything you remember from the shir today, gentlemen, it's going to be one thing. Is this a Midrash Yotzer or a Midrash Mekayim? Is it really, creatively, looking in the Torah and asking, what does the Torah command of me? Or no, I know what the Torah commands of me. I'm just looking for an anchor.
So, Rabbi?
Yes.
If someone has a Mesorah that a Pasuk is the source, and someone else does not have that Pasuk as a source, but he says, I have a Svara, why wouldn't the Mesorah of a Pasuk trump a recent Svara?
For a very simple reason, Bruce. You can argue that that's not the source.
But he says he has a Mesorah for it.
That's nice, but you can still argue it's not the source. I have a different Mesorah on that Pasuk. It happens in the Gemara endless times. That's not the source. From that source, we learn something else. That I can't be the source for this halacha. So that happens endless times. When you say Svara, you either agree with it, it's logical, it makes sense, or it doesn't. When you say it's the source, I can always say I learned something else from that source. I can't use it for this.
But when someone says, I have a source that is Torah Moshe Sinai, that seems to end the debate. No one else says, oh, well, I don't.
Again, it could very well end the debate if indeed no one can argue with it. But if someone says, I have a different Masoret from Sinai, that argues with your source. Mm-hmm. Okay, I fulfilled my obligation to Bruce. Very, very happy. God willing, we will continue next week. Bruce, if I can please get the recording, you'll arrange it. Have a good day, everyone. Take care.
Thank you.